On our 1:30 docket, we have two cases, GF Gaming versus Taylor and U.S. Fax Law Center versus Henry Schein, Inc. Are counsel prepared to proceed in both of those cases?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Have all counsel received a copy of our written procedures? Do you have any questions? We would ask members of the audience who haven't seen those procedures to please turn off your cell phones so that the attorneys are not interrupted in their argument. Otherwise, we're prepared to hear argument in GF Gaming. And if you wish to reserve time for rebuttal, you don't have to ask permission to do so. If there's time left, just sit down and it's yours.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Diane Smith, registration 14340, appearing on behalf of GF Gaming. Mr. Reha and I have agreed to divide our time 9 minutes to me and 6 minutes to his clients. With respect to the cost award made by Judge Habas in this case, her overall award of costs constituted an abuse of discretion. A trial court may not make a conclusory statement that a particular cost or cost category is reasonable based upon the fact that the attorney billed the client for those costs without further analysis of both the reasonableness and the necessity for the costs. The court cannot abdicate the obligation to review the charges incurred by any particular side of a litigation for both reasonableness and necessity. In fact, under the Brody case, the court must make a reasoned decision for each item of cost presented. Now, in this case, if you look at the transcript of the hearing, the judge said she would not review individual cost items unless and until an appellate court told her she had to. That appears at page 98 of the transcript. What she said is, I believe the best way to determine whether something is reasonably incurred for the development of the case at the time it was incurred is to look to counsel as officers of the court to do their jobs, to do their gatekeeping functions, to look at items of cost before they send it to the client. Now, it is clear under the reasoning of this court's cases and the decisions of our Supreme Court that it merely billing a client a cost says nothing about whether the cost was reasonable or necessarily incurred.
Well, didn't both the attorney who testified and the expert witness express opinions that the costs were reasonable and necessary?
They did, Your Honor.
And did the plaintiffs present any contrary evidence?
We cross-examined evidence in this case, which we deemed to be the best way to approach the evidence that was presented.
But you presented no independent evidence of unreasonableness or lack of necessity?
We did not present any independent evidence. If you look at the transcript in dealing with the experts, particularly Mr. Barton, what the court found in her findings of fact was that as to the three experts that had been used by the defendants, they clearly overlapped. She also found that Mr. Barton's costs were high. In fact, she said on the record, I'm underestimating when I say high. Likewise, when she looked at the costs of the Texas deposition, she indicated in her findings that she didn't think that they were necessary. Nonetheless, she went on and she said, based upon Mr. Matthews' position in the case, that she was going to award them and that she wasn't going to look at any particular item of cost in deciding whether it should or should not have been awarded. She simply adopted the bill of costs wholesale and awarded it. Under the reasoning of this court's decisions and the Supreme Court decisions, we ask that the court overturn the cost award, at least as to the experts and at least as to the unnecessary costs related to the Texas depositions. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time and would address the arguments that Mr. Reha has made concerning the cost allocation until rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, John F. Reha on behalf of the plaintiff Galactic Gaming. What I wanted to discuss today was not necessarily the items noted in our brief, because I assume that counsel would discuss those with you anyway. We agree with the other plaintiffs as to the general arguments as to the cost. What I wanted to highlight in our argument was the apportionment issue between the two sets of plaintiffs. The court is probably aware that except for costs associated with the experts that each plaintiff retained, which the court attributed those costs to each plaintiff, which we don't have an objection to, the court then went and split the remainder of the cost half and half, one half against Galactic, the other half against the other plaintiffs. We had asked that the court either impose those jointly and severally, or if it was going to do an apportionment, that it apportioned on the basis of one-seventh, not one-half, for Galactic.
Why would one-seventh reflect the overall complexities of the case and, you know, the necessity, assuming there is was a necessity to incur costs?
Well, there, as the case proceeded and as discovery took place, because these costs all have to do with discovery, there really was no distinction between Galactic and the other plaintiffs, except for the Texas deposition, which weren't even cleared with us. We still were attributed half of those. I'm going to talk about those separately. But as to the non-Texas deposition costs, there really wasn't any distinction made between plaintiffs. All counsel were there. The witnesses' testimony had to do with the claims of both plaintiffs. The cases were consolidated before discovery ever really began, and the claims were fairly much identical. So there really didn't seem to be any distinction between our claims and the claims of the other plaintiffs in terms of how it would be affected by cost. I asked the court, and it's in the transcript, I actually asked Judge Habas, could you give me a reason for this? And she did not. She refused to. So I don't know. I do not know why she decided to attribute half of these costs to Galactic and one half to the remaining plaintiffs. I can only surmise that it's because Galactic's case was filed and then the remaining plaintiffs joined in that case. There were separate lawsuits at the beginning that were later consolidated, or that Galactic was represented by separate counsel. Those are the only two reasons I can even come up with that could possibly be the basis for a division half and half. I can't think of any others. Perhaps counsel can, but I can't. So we understand that the basis for this court's review of Judge Habas is an abuse of discretion, and I would assert that, in fact, that is an abuse of discretion. The court could not even articulate a reason to separate those costs half and half. The fair way to do this would have been to have each plaintiff be responsible for an equal amount of costs. And if I could highlight that with the Texas depositions, the Texas depositions only had to do with how the other plaintiffs were financing their litigation. It had nothing to do with Galactic whatsoever. We had no role in those. My calendar was not even cleared for those because we simply had no role in those whatsoever. We were not planning on going. Both the other counsel knew that. And so my calendar just was irrelevant as to whether or not I even needed to be aware of them or even participate in them. No one planned that I would, and that was known to everyone. So even those costs, and I realize they're not a huge amount, they're about $4,000, even those costs, we were attributed half of those. And it doesn't seem to be any basis for that whatsoever. So the standard, again, is an abuse of discretion.
And let's set aside the Texas depositions.
Okay.
I mean, why is 50-50 an abuse of discretion, but one-seventh or one-eighth isn't?
Well, I think it's because there isn't any distinction made, and I don't think can be any distinction made, between what additional costs Galactic being involved caused, how Galactic being involved caused the other plaintiffs to incur additional costs, or simply wasn't. I'd put it this way. If I had withdrawn, and if Galactic had been represented by the Berg Simpson firm, I don't think this issue would have even come up. I think the court would naturally have attributed cost equally across the plaintiffs. Again, I asked for a reason. I didn't get one, so I don't know why the court did what it did.
Would a joint and several award?
So we actually requested
joint
and several.
That's what you said earlier. So that all the seven could be jointly and severally liable, and the defendant can collect against whoever he can collect against.
And I realize that means that my client could theoretically be liable for it all.
Make it worse.
But, well, I have to understand my client's economic situation, though. I mean, I think that's actually a fair way to do it. But if, as I said before, if apportionment is going to occur, if it isn't going to be jointly and severally, then it should be 1-7, 1-7, 1-7, not one half and collectively six sharing the other half. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Bob Matthews, a law firm of Fagerian Benson, attorney registration number 9457. I represent the defendants in this case, the law firm of Snell and Wilmer, and one of their partners, Kevin Taylor. We're here because the plaintiffs brought malpractice action against the defendants seeking $130 million in damages. And their claim has already been determined by the trial court and affirmed by a division of this court as being barred by the applicable statute of limitations. It's important to remember that although a substantial amount of costs were awarded in excess of $202,000, most of those, majority of those costs, are not even disputed by the plaintiffs. In fact, the Berg, we refer to the Berg-Simpson plaintiffs, referring to those five plaintiffs that are represented by the Berg-Simpson law firm. The Berg-Simpson plaintiffs' counsel stated on the record at the hearing that they did not dispute $127,000 of the costs. They listed the categories of the costs which they disputed, and that's set forth in the transcript of the cost hearing. The Berg-Simpson plaintiffs did not dispute the award of costs involving four of the five experts that the defendants had retained. They disputed only a portion, $40,000 worth of the costs that were assessed as a result of the testimony of Mr. Barton. They did not object to the other $16,000 of costs. Now, Galactic had, at the cost hearing, had similar, took a similar position, except they concluded and stipulated on the record at that hearing that they did not contest Mr. Barton's fees. So to the extent that they are have argued in their appellate briefs that Mr. Barton's fees were unreasonable or were unnecessary, they waived that argument before the trial court. One of the things the plaintiffs do not challenge is they're not challenging the standard review, which is an abuse of discretion. The major thrust of the argument challenging the award of costs is that they argue that the trial court basically just simply accepted whatever I said and didn't do any analysis of the evidence. I think that ignores the record when you look at the entire transcript. The entire transcript was 112 pages at the cost hearing. What the court actually said was that she did not believe she was required to go and make a specific finding on each and every item. Now, we're talking about each and every item of cost. We're talking about thousands of entries, several thousand entries. We submitted 120 pages of documentation of the costs, and the court did not believe that it had to go through each, for example, each and every time entry of each and every expert and make a specific finding on each entry. And I think the trial court was correct. The plaintiffs criticized Judge Habas because she makes a finding that my testimony was credible, and because she said I was initially a gatekeeper, that I should, that I performed a function of not charging the client unreasonable costs. She did not simply say that because I said they were reasonable costs, therefore she was entering that order. It was appropriate for her to weigh my credibility as a trial judge should weigh the credibility of any witness. That is done all the time.
Can I ask you two questions about the Texas depositions?
Yes.
First, why should any costs be awarded for depositions that weren't taken?
The overwhelming majority of those costs were related to depositions that were taken in Texas. There were four depositions taken in Texas. There were, and I don't know the exact number, but there were a number of several hundred dollars of costs that were awarded for depositions that were not taken. The reason those depositions were not taken is because there were, I believe, three or four witnesses who initially would not talk to me when I called them, and only when subpoenaed for their deposition, then were willing to talk to me, and we canceled their deposition.
Well, does that make those, I recognize the amount is small, but does that sequence make those costs recoverable, and if so, on what basis?
I think they're recoverable because they were necessarily incurred preparing for trial. The fact that they ultimately didn't need to be used, I think that's true of all costs, or not even all costs, but of many costs, that at the time they were incurred, they're reasonably incurred in preparation for trial, but ultimately a trial takes, or the case takes a certain turn, such you didn't have to use that particular witness or whatever.
Well, this isn't a question of not using the depots. This is a question of they weren't taken. So, I mean, how does the use fit into that analysis?
I think the expense, that is the subpoena, was necessary for trial, meaning we needed that information for trial. The only way we could get that information to use at trial was to subpoena that witness. The fact that we didn't have to then go forward with the deposition, I don't think makes that expense of subpoenaing them unreasonable or unnecessary.
Second question, then. As I understand, the theory of the Texas depositions was an implication or an allegation that GF Gaming had basically syndicated the lawsuit to some Texas investors, correct?
Yes.
Why should any of those costs be allocated to Galactic, which apparently was not even accused of having done so?
Well, first of all, as to the issue of the apportionment, we had taken the position that it should be joint and several. We felt that was the appropriate award. We did not appeal that determination because we didn't feel it was an abuse of discretion by the trial court. As to those particular costs and assessment of Galactic, the only, I guess, the basis for assessing them against Galactic would be that Galactic was part of the original group. And this was not, there was not only a question of who had an interest in the malpractice case, it was also a question of who had an interest in the underlying case and in what percentage. And as the Texas plaintiffs, excuse me, Texas witnesses, had an interest, a percentage interest in the underlying case, that reduced the damages which could be recovered by any of the plaintiffs, including Galactic.
Is that in the record? I mean, was that developed at the cost hearing?
I don't recall that I testified to that particular fact.
Okay. Thank you.
After the judge made a determination, she actually says, as way of background, I find that my testimony was credible. She says that's by way of background. She then proceeds to look at each and every category of cost and make a determination. She specifically addressed the issue as to whether three damage experts was appropriate. She specifically addressed the reasonableness of Mr. Barton's fees. She specifically addressed the necessity and reasonableness of the Texas deposition costs. She specifically addressed coding and copying expenses. And she specifically addressed computer research expenses. As I mentioned, she didn't give us everything we asked for. We asked for joint and several liability, and she declined to do so in the exercise of her discretion.
Well, let me ask the same question I asked before. Would that be a fair way to apportion these costs?
If you mean in terms of joint and several?
Yes.
I believe joint and several was the appropriate way. I don't believe it was an abuse of discretion, but I believe it was the more appropriate way, given that I believe, with the exception of expert witnesses,
yes,
retained,
I understand. Except for the ones that they particularly retained and the others particularly retained.
I would have said, I would think that the more appropriate way to do it was to say joint and several, because frankly, all of those expenses generally would have been incurred if only Galactic filed the lawsuit, and they would have been all incurred if only the Burke-Simpson plaintiffs filed the lawsuit.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off track.
No, that's not a problem. There was substantial evidence in the record to support the trial court's findings. There was my affidavit. There was 120 pages of documentation. There was my testimony. There was Mr. Barton's testimony. The primary area that the plaintiffs have focused on is the three damage experts and the fact that Mr. Barton's fee was in excess of $50,000. You need to look at those expenses in the context of the entire case. This was an extremely complex case. In fact, the trial court found that, or stated on the record, this was one of the most complex cases she had ever seen. by its very nature, a malpractice case involves underlying litigation is complex because you, in effect, have two different cases. You have the malpractice case, you have the underlying case. The underlying case, the case within a case, was an incredibly complex case involving a dispute between Central City and its business interests and Black Hawk, its business interests. There were nine plaintiffs, 20 defendants, 14 different claims for relief, COCO, RICO, breach of contract, the state tort claims, which were the subject of the malpractice action, antitrust claims. Now, ultimately, all the claims were dismissed. And the reason was because the facts didn't neatly fit within any theory, which made it very difficult to plead and to prove, and ultimately, they were all dismissed. Besides the complexity of the case, the damage amount, $130 million, in excess of the policy of the insurance limits of this law firm. This was a bet the company case. If they lost $130 million award, this was a disaster.
Is that in the record, that the claims exceeded the firm's malpractice?
I believe I testified to that on the record. I don't believe there was the amount of the insurance, but I believe I testified it was in excess of the insurance limits. While the three experts made relatively similar conclusions, their areas of expertise and the basis for their analysis was substantially different, and that's what the trial court found. Mr. Barden was a more conventional damage expert, a CPA who had a lot of experience with casinos. Mr. Zapor had worked for casinos for many years and was a consultant, and it was his job as a consultant to determine what was feasible and what would improve the feasibility of a casino. Two of the six plaintiffs were casinos or wanted to build casinos, and the other plaintiffs were property owners or owners of businesses in Central City that would be impacted if there was more casino traffic. So their damage claim turned totally on what was the impact of the delay of the building of a road from I-70 to Central City, and what impact would that have on the six plaintiffs. Our third expert was
Mr. Frick. Mr. Yes. Matthews, you said earlier that there was no objection to the damage, to the costs for four of the five. We're really going to talk about three damage experts here. You're saying as to Mr. Frick and Mr. Zapor, plaintiffs never objected to the cost?
No, the plaintiffs, the Berg Simpson plaintiffs, on the record, right at the beginning of the hearing, they talk about what they are disputing. And they dispute $40,000 of Mr. Barton's fee.
Right.
They dispute the Texas depositions. They dispute the copying and coding and the computerized research. They say they conceded. Now, they didn't name it. They didn't state it by name. But clearly, by implication, they said they did not object to the remainder of the costs.
For Frick and Zapor. That's what you're saying.
Yes, and that would include Mr. Zapor and Mr. Frick.
And as to Barton, they only object to $40,000 of the $56,000.
Correct.
Okay. And that's in the record, you're saying?
Yes, that is in the beginning of I don't have the page number. I believe it's on page 10 or 12 of the transcript. And Galactic on page 72 concedes the reasonableness of Mr. Barton's fee. In addition, Mr. Barton testified himself and testified regarding the reasonableness of his fee. I've already talked about the Texas depositions and why they were necessary to take. The coding, the cost of coding, which has been challenged by the plaintiffs. Coding is simply when you have an overwhelming number of documents, you have to have some way of accessing those documents. The only evidence in the record was my testimony, which was that is now a standard practice in complex commercial litigation where there are lots of documents, and there were certainly hundreds of thousands of documents in this case.
Is there any authority that those costs are recoverable under the Colorado statute?
We did not find, there was no specific case law addressing the one way or the other, the award of costs for coding.
In the Colorado statute?
Correct.
Federal statute, there is.
Actually, I'm not aware of that. Okay. I certainly accept your statement. Okay. The plaintiffs complained that the court did not explain its decision in great enough detail and cites the case of Federal Insurance Company versus Feral Gas. In that case, there was no hearing, there was no documentation, there was no affidavit. It was just submitting a bill of costs. In this case, To the contrary, there was 120 pages of documentation. There was my affidavit. There were several hours of testimony. And the court did go through and explain its findings as to each category of cost. At the end of the day, there was very substantial evidence to support the trial court's award of costs in this case. There was clearly not an abuse of discretion, which is the applicable standard. I would ask this court to affirm the trial court's award of costs in this case. Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to address the remarks made by Mr. Reha concerning the 50-50 allocation before I move on to the specific issues raised by Mr. Matthews. If you look back at the briefing that went before the trial court, it's clear that a trial court has the discretion, has a range of alternatives to pick from in deciding whether to allocate costs. One is the Kobai case that allows it to be allocated on a 50-50 basis. The other is the Hale versus Erickson line of cases that permits joint and several. And under the Buckmiller case, it's clear that where the court has a range of alternatives to pick from, an abuse of discretion occurs when the court goes beyond that range of alternatives. She didn't do that in this case. In fact, she had very specific reasons for saying why she was dividing it 50-50 as opposed to some fraction thereof or based upon joint and several liability. What she said was that it was inequitable to impose joint and several liability in this case because the reason it was being asked for was because Galactic Gaming was impecunious, that they weren't going to be able to pay their share, and she felt under the facts of the case and how it had been prosecuted that it would be inequitable to require the GF Gaming plaintiffs, the Berg Simpson plaintiffs, to pay more of the costs than it would to be allocated under a 50-50 basis. If you look at page 107 and 108 of the transcript as well as 111, she doesn't refuse to give a reason for why she's dividing it on a 50-50 basis. What she recognizes is that there really were two groups of plaintiffs moving this case forward, GF Gaming plaintiffs and Galactic Gaming. Different causes of action. There were breaches of fiduciary duty claims that my clients had that the other clients did not, or that the other parties did not. Different experts. There were different claims, different evidence, different causes. She looked at that and she said it made sense to divide it on a 50-50 basis after subtracting out the costs of the experts, which we had all stipulated should be divided according to the party who was making the claim or who had sponsored the expert. If you look at the transcript, had that stipulation not occurred, she would have gone straight down the line 50-50 because she deemed that to be the most equitable basis upon which to divide costs in this case. With respect to
why would joint and several not be fair? Except for the fact that apparently more of the obligation would fall on your clients?
Well, what she said was under joint and several liability, she thought it was inequitable to go on that basis because she thought that the whole reason for doing that was to put all of the costs on the GF Gaming clients as opposed to dividing it between the two plaintiff groups.
Was there evidence in the record that the Galactic entity or group had become impecunious?
Well, there was actually statements in the record about it, I believe, having gone bankrupt and come back out of bankruptcy, and that there was a sale of the company at some point during the litigation. That, I believe, is in the record, Your Honor.
Not disputed by you?
I don't think anybody disputes that.
Thank you.
With respect to the bill of costs, and back to the issues raised by Mr. Matthews, we asked to have the bill of costs reduced by approximately $74,000.
Consisting of what, please?
Consisting of $40,000 in charges by Mr. Barton, $5,500 addressed to the Texas depositions, and other costs that you will see detailed at page 3 of the transcript, which is where I make the opening statement as to what costs we wanted to see reduced from the bills. And our argument with respect to the order as it's before this court is not that we were disputing all of those costs at that time, but because she didn't go through the gatekeeper function that she is required to do before she makes an award of costs, as opposed to allowing someone else, the attorney for the defendants, to carry forward that function. Finally, as far as the Texas depositions, it's our position that at the time those were taken, Mr. Matthews and his group didn't need to take those depositions. They were unnecessary, and the evidence for that, we believe, is in the cross-examination that's before the court in the transcript. And I have a minute 30 that I think belongs to Mr. Reha. So unless the court has questions, I'm going to sit down.
Well, did you dispute the amounts that were sought for Frick and Zapor? You didn't quite answer Judge Webb's question all the way there.
Did we dispute those? No, yeah. We did not specifically dispute those in the trial court. Our dispute was with Mr. Barton.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate the arguments of counsel. It's certainly a complex case. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. A written opinion will